Hello all, good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I am Nicholas Baines, Head of IR for Intersemana. With me here today for our earnings call, and as always fireside chat, is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer, and Marco Zangari, our Head of Corporate Finance and Planning. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation will be available online, and the webcast link has been provided to you in your registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call, you'll hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. Reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call or the annual financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intersemana's operating activities and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2021 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations, and the actual results and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intersemana makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intersemana disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intersemana third quarter 2021 financial report for a basic discussion of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. And now we can move to our chat. Paulo, beginning from the top, shall we walk through the volume performance in the different regions for this third quarter?
Nick Zangari and you all, good morning and pleasure to be here. Overall, our top line was marked by a volume sold of 5.4 million tons in the third quarter, practically in line with the same quarter of last year. However, one should bear in mind that last year's second half demand was extremely strong in Brazil, as the pandemic in the first half created a pent-up demand in the second half, which resulted in an inflated third quarter 2020 post-pandemic base for comparison to this third quarter of 2021. In fact, in Brazil, the solid volume sold of 2.5 million tons by Intersemana Brazil was a robust level, helped by the performance of the housing segment, as the pace of the residential launches in recent quarters continue to be firm. Despite the solid volume in the quarter, it represented a 2% year-over-year decline due to the inflated comparison base. The agro-positive dynamic continued to benefit cement demand, leading Midwest and South regions to post the highest growth rates. Meanwhile, Northeast reported shy growth compared to the other regions, as it's also the region with the highest number of cement players. But again, performance very healthy. Moving to our neighbors in Argentina, the demand continued to register solid pace of growth, reaching levels above pre-pandemic. Macroeconomic conditions, with currency being burned by inflation, continue to drive the retail market, motivating customers to spend any money left in real assets, such as construction. Also interesting to note that the bulk market has recovered and is around the historical 40% plateau against 6% of bags, so that constructors believe a stability cycle for the last quarter due to the continuity of the works start early this year. Under these conditions, Luma Negra posted a record sales of 1.6 million tons in the quarter, an expansion of 80% over the same period of last year, and 30% higher than third quarter of 2019, pre-pandemic period. With regards to our African operations, and so that you don't get tired of me, perhaps Zanga, you can jump in and drive us through the volume in South Africa, Egypt, and Mozambique.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. I think it's important to start highlighting that our operations in Africa went through very different business environments during the third quarter. In South Africa, market demand has been recovering well during the year. However, in the quarter, the performance was affected by the social unrest in July and also by some production constraints that our operation faced temporarily. As a result, our operations NPC registered a compression on volumes sold of 9% when compared to the same quarter of last year. Meanwhile, in Egypt, although the competitive landscape in the industry remained very challenging, we saw volumes in our operations expanding for another quarter. Warmer regional construction activity continued to benefit cement demand. With the addition of the production quota system in place since July, which enhanced competitive dynamics. As a consequence, our subsidiary, Amireia, posted volume increase of 20% when compared to the third quarter of 2020. On the other hand, in Mozambique, after the entry of a new player in the southern region of the country, the competitive environment has changed dramatically. In this context, our operation Cimentos de Mozambique posted a drop of 27% in volumes when compared to the same quarter of last year. Paulo, that would be a quick overview on the African operations volumes.
Perfect, Zangadi. And thanks for illustrating how the different winds have blown in our operations in Africa. So therefore, to wrap up, consolidated volumes continue at solid level, closing the quarter at 5.4 million tons, a slightly increase of 1% when compared to the third quarter of last year, supported by solid dynamic in Argentina, significant recovery in Egypt, and by holding up a healthy level in Brazil.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Paulo and Zangari. It seems that overall demand held up nicely. And now moving to pricing behavior during the quarter, we saw rising global inflation and higher energy costs in all our geographies. How pricing dynamic could offset such impact?
Theoretically, yes, Nick. Prices could or should offset the cost increases, mainly electric and thermal energy costs in our case. However, in reality, if one takes a look at petcoke prices in Brazil this year, for example, one will see that petcoke prices increased by more than 100% and reached maximum levels in the last 10 years. Therefore, in practice, pricing adjustments are only mitigating the cost increases. As a result, a better pricing dynamic was verified in most of the regions, and as a result, our sales of 5.4 million tons translated into $492 million, an increase of 33% in comparison to the third quarter of last year. As one can easily guess, the revenue expansion was mostly driven by solid performances in Brazil and Argentina. In Brazil, Intercement Brazil represented 45% of our total volume sold and posted material price increase in local terms when compared to the third quarter of last year. Price dynamic in Brazil market continue on the rising trend, supported by a more rational competitive environment due to a much healthier industry structure, although below energy costs increase. in a nutshell, InterCement Brazil revenues expanded by 32% in Brazilian reais, while raising 29% in dollar terms, considering the real depreciation in the period. In Argentina, our controlled company, Luma Negra, contributed with 30% of our consolidated volume. Prices in dollar terms recovered this year and is dancing a bit over $90 per ton in dollar terms after significant drop in 2020, contributing to a solid top line expansion, up 54% in dollar terms. Finally, looking at our African operations, which accounted for around 25% of our total volume, what we saw in summary was that Egypt and South Africa posted price increases in local currency and in dollar terms, while Mozambique registered price drop in local currency. South Africa saw prices to raise around 4% in local currency and even strong in dollar terms given the rand appreciation in the period. Pricing dynamics benefit from a healthier demand since the beginning of the year, which included some recovery of the bulk market. Meanwhile, in Egypt, after years of declining prices, we saw another quarter of price recovery in local terms, which was helped by better competitive dynamic after the implementation of the new production quota system by the government. In Mozambique, prices were down in local terms, but almost flat in dollar terms, giving metical appreciation in the period. Compressed prices reflect the new competitive landscape after the entry of the new player in the south of the country, as mentioned by Zangari, fighting for market share.
Good, Paulo. Good to see some consciousness on cost pass-through in the current context of higher global inflation. And considering this major villain of the quarter, especially global inflation and higher energy costs, how the revenue performance has translated into EBITDA generation?
Yes, Nick, spot on. Especially thermal energy, electric power, and freight costs had a huge impact in line to what I mentioned before. Our total cash cost base, including expenses, variable, and fixed costs, totally $370 million, a 35% increase in comparison to the third quarter of last year. In unitary terms, total cash cost per ton raised at the same magnitude at 34% on a year-over-year basis and reflect the material cost increase on key production elements. Just a small parenthesis here, let me also mention the company's efforts in increasing its co-processing through the use of alternative fuels, such as tires, biomass, urban waste, and so on and so forth. In Brazil, for example, out of the total thermal energy needed in our plants, 25% were from alternative fuels. On the top of that, very important to highlight that given the expansion on top line of 33%, we registered a positive effect from operational leverage as a cost mitigating factor. In fact, all in all, EBITDA generation expanded 19% on a year-over-year basis to reach $127 million. However, given the magnitude of the costs increase, we saw margin compression in the quarter to 26% from 28.5% in the third quarter of last year, a decline of 2.5 percentage points. And Nick, let me emphasize again what I said last quarter or the quarter before. In fact, I do see our recent quarter's performance as a recovery period. and not as a growth phase. Our two main operations, Brazil and Argentina, have been pushing that recovery and are now running at a new and stronger level of results when compared to 2019. Brazil has reached an adjusted EBITDA of $48 million this quarter, an expansion of 16% when compared to the third quarter of last year, at a healthy EBITDA margin of 29%. While in Argentina, despite the macroeconomic uncertainties, Loma Negra was able to post an adjusted EBITDA of $66 million, a 35% growth in comparison to the same quarter of last year, and an EBITDA margin of 29%.
That's right, Paulo. And we also had a relevant recovery in Egypt as well. After years of declining results, it showed signs of improvement in recent quarters. So margin is still compressed there, but growing. Moving now to the components below EBITDA, such as working capital and CapEx, could you briefly comment on these cash moves, Paulo?
Yeah, sure. Well, generally, as part of our seasonal path, the third quarters of the year typically register positive fluctuation in operational assets and liabilities, given higher demand in the quarter than first or second quarter of the year, leading to a higher consumption of inventories. Nevertheless, in the third quarter of this year, operational working capital was affected by fuel purchases, aiming to optimize the cost of fuel, which we expect to be reverted with the stabilization of international fuel prices. As a result, fluctuation in operational assets and liabilities during the quarter free up $5 million of funds. CapEx totaling $41 million in the quarter, mostly limited to organic investment as La Mali project was concluded with the queue commissioning in the second quarter of this year, while mill and packing line were fully operational in the third quarter. Important to note that on these two components, working capital and CapEx, the comparison with third quarter of last year turns to present some distortions, given that last year we were under COVID context and pandemic uncertainties, which led us to a primary focus on cash preservation. In a nutshell, those were the highlights on operational cash flow. In terms of our perhaps financial cash flow and structure, I believe Zangari could enhance our discussion.
Oh, thank you, Paulo. Great idea. I'd better start recalling the debt movement made in September, on which Intercement Participações repaid 1 billion reais on its debentures, supported by the issuance of a new debenture on Intercement Brazil in the same amount of 1 billion reais. The new debt was under the same conditions of the other debentures, such as rates, maturity schedule, etc. And we also had to disburse the interest accrued on the debentures amount that was prepaid. The issuance of such debenture at Intercement Brazil improves its efficiency on capital allocation, improving company's capital structure. It also contributes to meet company's financial strategy to allocate its debt at opcos instead of placing them at the holdcos. During the quarter, we also saw some debt amortization in Argentina and a minor payment of quarterly dividend to the preferred shareholder on our hydroelectric power generation business in Brazil, besides the interest paid to bondholders. As a result, we ended the quarter with a cash position of $179 million and net debt at $1,356 million, being relatively flat when compared to December 2020. Therefore, financial leverage decreased to 2.9 times now from 3.8 times by the end of last year. The deleveraging trend remained in place.
Yes, Anga, the deleverage trend continued on track. Good news. And Paulo, we know that Intercement does not provide any quantitative guidance, but here maybe you could share very briefly and in a qualitative aspect your view for the coming quarters. Does the operational healthy trend should continue?
Well, current global economic environment places a lot of uncertainties, not only with regards to the new COVID variations, but also on international costs and inflation, highly affected by the disruptions on global business chains. Therefore, a key question mark for us is how international fuel costs will behave going forward, in particular, pet coke costs. It seems that during the last weeks, we are starting to see a drop on pet coke prices. Usually, spring in the North Hemisphere reduces the coal demand. However, the higher economic activity in the US with higher fuel consumption is pressing refineries to increase production. Also, China and India are out of the pet coke market due to the coal availability in their local markets. Mongolia has also increased its coal production, and railway transportation with China is operating at full capacity. Fortunately, the market is expecting the maintenance of the current trend down on pet coke prices. And of course, in case that holds true, it will favorably affect our results next year. In terms of cement demand, we believe that Brazil will continue to see a robust demand. Perhaps not the kind of growth we saw in the second half of last year, but on a very healthy level, especially after so many years of declining demand. One should realize that despite the uncertainties inherent on the presidential elections in Brazil in 2022, it is important to say that any candidate who gets elected will have to devote additional attention to the construction industry, not only as a job generator to against unemployment, that's a fact, but also in order to reduce the country's housing deficit, another fact, and to speed up the infrastructure needs, also another fact. In terms of Argentina, no doubt that the current economic and political uncertainties will remain, especially after the recent regional elections. However, the current recovery trends shall continue, magnified by the local perception of real estate as a proxy for hard currency. Finally, Africa shall present some mixed signs. While South Africa and, to a certain extent, also Egypt, the demand has bounced back. Despite any surprises that we may face ahead, the trend shall continue to be favorable. At the same time, Mozambique shall continue to face a tough competitive landscape. The outlook is not so clear as that of the other two African countries. Overall, despite any potential roller coaster we may face in some quarters, we continue to be optimistic with regards to the overall market trends. As far as just EBITDA is concerned, last year we posted $320 million. This year we are making another important step towards our recovery so that a much higher EBITDA level should be reached. With year-to-date adjusted EBITDA of $343 million so far. So in 2022, our main goal is to defend our current position in order to foster our recovery even further.
Great, Paulo. That was a great summary for perspectives for next quarters. And, well, Paulo Zangari, After going through the highlights of third quarter 2021, a great and solid quarter, I guess it's a very good moment to open the floor for some questions. And Paulo, before we move to the questions from our investors, analysts, and bankers, let me raise two questions for you. First one, a point that would be good for everybody to have some color is the recent press noise last October when Intercement and other players were included in a public civil lawsuit filed by the Brazilian Federal Prosecutor's Office, the MPF in São Paulo, that accused the cement companies of being part of a 20-year cartel. What's your view on that, Paulo?
Yeah, good question. Thanks. I said before, I guess it's important again to go back to 2015 when CADE, the antitrust body in Brazil, convicted Intercement Brazil and other players of cartel practice in the period of 2002 to 2005. Naturally, that due to a series of inconsistencies in such a decision, Intercement filed an annulment action in court against CADE. And as a result, all convictions were successfully suspended by the federal court by an early protection. Naturally, that Intercement continues to request for a definitive annulment decision. Now, with regards to this recent new civil action of the Federal Public Ministry, MPF, mentioned by the press last October, I guess. Intercement was aware of this civil action, although the company has not been officially summoned by the MPF so far. We also understand that other players have already been summoned by the MPF. However, it is worth noting that the action stems from this old administrative decision imposed by CAD that I mentioned before, so that this one is a kind of a pão amanhecido, as we say in Portuguese, or renewed news, with both lacking solid legal grounds. It is worth noting also that at this time, the MPF from São Paulo presented amounts that are totally unfounded, not to say bizarre, without any basis or criteria, as they only copied the vote of the reporter of the case at CADE. Anyway, we are talking here about another decade or so to have a position on this new action in case that moves forward. This is because specialized lawyers believe that any action related to this old litigation is already full-time buried now in 2021. The CADE decision took place in 2014-15. In any case, our external lawyers who sponsored this old case and, of course, ourselves continue to be confident of success at the end of the process in all court instances, although this will still take some good time, as I mentioned before. Just another piece of information. The same prosecutor of São Paulo, MPF, as part of her case, is stating that because of such cartel, the players could not enter in any kind of reorganization, perhaps targeting the recent acquisition of Lafarge Holcim assets in Brazil by CSN. However, such injunction was denied and fully rejected by the Superior Instant Court. So, I trust this can bring some light to this somehow apparently confusing legal system in Brazil, although we trust that at the end, justice will prevail.
Good. Thank you, Paulo, for clarifying this matter. And the second question I would like to raise is another front. Now that we have sour market conditions for an IPO, high inflation and high interest rates, which implies in higher financial burden in a market with some headwind, What are companies' plans to consider upcoming short-term maturities?
Nick, thanks also for question. As it's also good to have the opportunity to restate our financial strategy. In fact, nothing has changed with regards to our financial strategy. Raising funds through our operating companies, similar to what we did with Luma Negra, or to what we are planning to do with Intersmart Brazil, is the goal already aligned with our board of directors and shareholders. By the same token, refinancing our 24 bonds is another goal fully aligned with our board of directors and shareholders, as is the optimization of our African assets. However, we will not execute these strategic moves at any price. We are very aware of the value of such assets, and we will defend them on behalf of our shareholders and investors. With regards to some small loans that are maturing, we do expect to roll them over so that we do not create any undesired liquidity pressure. In fact, we just closed a clean 100 million reais loan with a one-year tenor with HSBC here in Brazil. This shows something important that we must say. We will only make a strategic move with Intersmart Brazil or our African operations in case the outcome is such that the capital structure is also balanced at Intersmart holding level. This is because with the current capital structure, Intersmart holding continues with the inflow needs from the operating companies. Therefore, we will make sure that this inflow will stop only when the overall capital structure is satisfactorily addressed. I guess it was important to share our view on this front, Nick.
Yeah, good. And Paul, it was indeed very important to share the view on this front because we got some questions here from our investors on this matter. So I think it's already answered, both regarding IPO and also the refinance of the bonds. And then I think we can move to another question here from Eliseo Sanchi from La Renvial. Eliseo asks about the volumes is low in Brazil in fourth quarter and how do we expect the prices to evolve in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, that's a good question because this is the general perception because, you know, thanks and Eliseo for raising that. Because basically people, they are comparing to, you know, the same quarter of last year. However, when we see volumes that we book it or the industry book this third quarter or that is booking the fourth quarter, and we analyze those volumes, we see that the overall demand level in Brazil, it's really at a very solid level, especially when compared to what we saw since 2015. Okay. I guess on our side, we continue to push prices. Of course, that some of the medium small players that are not that quick in, you know, closing their books, I guess that there is a kind of lag until they can feel what is the impact of the energy costs. But some of them, they have already felt that, and they are also trying to adjust their prices. So, considering all the hard lesson that you know, cement companies they have learned during the recent years by dropping prices, I'm pretty sure that now that we have a industry structure much more rational, I believe that price is going to be one of the key metrics to be managed, especially when we consider. You know, with the price level that we have in other geographies. So this is, I would say, a major positive point that the industry is at this point in time, I would say, sedimenting based on what we saw in recent years.
Yeah, thank you, Paulo. And then we move to the next question. The next question from Jonathan from DebtWire. Jonathan asked about the deferred tax asset issue at the Brazilian subsidiary level, which is a subject that has been on discussion. And when do you expect to be able to pay dividends from Brazil to the holding company?
Jonathan, thanks for the question. I guess that the overall debt push down, as we call here internally, bring 1 billion reais of debentures to Intersement Brazil. Basically, Intersement Brazil granted an intercompany loan to Intersement Holding in order to pay down the debentures. Therefore, we still have that kind of intercompany loan from Intercement to Brazil to Intercement Holding. So the idea is to pay down that intercompany loan with dividends. So dividends that Intercement Brazil should be declaring should be that obligation to pay should offset this obligation that Intersmith Holding has to pay back. And in order to do that, we do have something around 800 million reais in deferred tax credits at the Intersmith Brazil. Therefore, we should be booking that, and that is going to create the proper reserve so that this dividends can be paid by Intersmith Brazil. So this is going to be a kind of no cash transaction, but it's going to be very, very important to close this intercompany accounts that we have in terms of credits and debts.
Yeah, good. Good, Paulo. And this also answers another question that we had about this movement of 1 billion reais bilateral loan from another investor. I think we believe can change to the next question that will be from Sean Morgan from Fidelity. Sean Morgan asks about the strategy on the bonds and also if we will be waiting for the call price to fall to par in July 2022 to refinance and extend the bonds.
Yeah, Sean. Great question. I guess that at the end of the day, this is going to be the outcome of two things. The first one is we do have as our goal the need to refinance our or to extend our bonds before maturity so that automatically our debentures are also extended. So this is something that we do have to keep in mind. We still have time to get there. And on the second, and the second point that we have to keep in mind is that with a potential IPO of our Brazilian operation, we changed dramatically the capital structure of our group, basically enforcing even further our capital base. With, as a consequence, leverage should be going down to something around 2x or so. Therefore, even in credit terms for rating agent purpose, I guess the group would be in a totally different position in order to refinance in the 2024 bonds. Of course, that is the ideal, I would say, pathway to get there. But as I told you, we do have some deadlines in 24. Therefore, as we move towards to that 24 deadline, in case everything continues the way it is, very, very, very unlikely, but we could refinancing our bonds, issuing other bonds, so making a tender here, that would be a kind of a 5-year no-call too, because this way, in case we have to pay high interest, high coupon, high cost, we would be paying for 2 years. So that would give us another 2 years to do the IPO of the Brazilian subsidiary, and afterwards we'd be repurchasing the refinanced bonds. So as I mentioned, I guess that we do have this contingency plan in case we have to walk a little bit more until 2023-24 in order to refinance our bonds. Not to mention, you know, the kind of optimization of our African assets that could also play an important role, depend on how, you know, things could be sorted out with such assets.
Yeah. A question answered very well, Paulo. Thank you. I think we can move to the next question from Eliseo, from La Reinvial. The first question he makes is when we could expect the Brazilian IPO, which is partially explained at the beginning. And also, why don't you, the company do more shares repurchase in Argentina in order to avoid the cash, accumulation of cash?
Yeah, also good points, I guess. The IPO of the Brazilian company is going to take place when we see that market conditions for that are there. In fact, despite any delay that we somehow did with such an IPO, we are keeping the company as a listed company, and therefore we continue to release earnings for the quarters, and continue to discussions with investors, just to say that whenever the market is there, yes, we are planning to come back to an IPO. Okay. Next year, perhaps, I guess we do see some window in the first quarter, despite the difficult environment at this point in time. But, you know, from the second, first quarter, towards the beginning of the second quarter, we may have a small window there. Then we have presidential elections. We really have a big question mark if the window is going to remain or not. But again, most important point is making sure that the Brazilian company is prepared, and it is. With regards to Argentina, well, basically, we have a situation where the net debt is basically zero. And easy to guess that if things continue the way that they are, the company will start to pile up cash next year. At this point in time, the only alternative that we saw that was feasible was to buy back shares in the local market in Argentina, Merval Stock Exchange in pesos. However, we know that other companies such as Telecom Argentina, they have paid dividends using bonds of the Republic of Argentina. So that's to say that, yes, people, they are finding ways in order to optimize cash, and that includes reverting part of the cash to investors. So we are taking a look at that and also talk to the Argentinian government, because it's important that from a political point of view, there are no surprises as the government, could start to somehow put some pressure on the and retaliate some of the players that are trying to exit cash out of Argentina. So To make a long story short, I mean, anything that we are planning to do in Argentina in order to optimize cash is going to be something not 100%, but 101% according to the local law. We do realize the constraints that the government is facing, and Luma Negra is available to help that. In fact, just finished a kind of almost $350 million budget for the new plant of La Mali that has been just completed.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Paulo. I think we can move for the next question. The next question comes from Nicolas Fabiancic from Jefferies. Nicolas mentioned that the quarter was very positive. The outlook looks positive, but the bonds have been under pressure. If the company looks at opportunistic buybacks again, highlighting the bonds already held in treasury, and also if there is a new liability management into secured notes contemplated, or some update on the IPO, which you already mentioned here.
Yeah, also, Nicholas, good question. Basically, difficult to understand if there is any kind of rationale behind the 11% yield level. I guess that when you see, you know, how the company is doing, remember that a couple of years ago, leverage of the group was over 5 times. Now we are talking about not even 3 times, but somehow the market, for some reason, is not realizing that. And especially when you have in the press news that, as I said, are not that new. No, it's kind of more than 5 years old. But anyway, like this Cadi cartel thing that people are just refreshing what happened in the past. This, of course, that really affects the bond yield. However, we continue to pursue our financial strategy. I think it's a very sounding one, waterproof, and we are going to continue to move on that. On the $750 million 2024 bonds, as you know, we have acquired 200 million, so we have them sitting in our treasury. And of course, that any further purchase is going to depend on the level of liquidity that we may see in the system. And I say that because, as you can also note, our African operations, they also, or similar to Argentina, they also operate with a very, very low level of debt. Therefore, this kind of strategy that we implemented at the Investment Brazil, pushing down debt into Investment Brazil, we are also planning to do something similar to our African operations, start with South Africa that has zero debt. So just to make sure that we keep a decent liquidity level, holding level at the system. And again, in case this is over the level that we believe to be the minimum one, of course, that share buyback or bonds buyback are options to be contemplated.
Great. Thank you, Paul. I think we can move to the final question. We have a question from Lucas Vergara about reminding the cash breakdown among all the entities. And just to provide more detail here, Lucas, as we usually do, the cash position in Brazil in the end of the quarter was $55 million. Argentina was around $40 million. In Africa, another $40 million. And in the Hold Coast, another $40 million, roughly figures. And with this, I think we can conclude our call. Paulo and Zangari, I guess we had a very insightful morning here today.
Yes, Nick, I agree. It was a great chat, and it will be great to come back in the next quarter. Thank you.
Nick and Zangari, also enjoy our little chat. Now let's concentrate our efforts to make sure that we close the year in a great style. Let me thank you for being with us and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for joining today and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.